changed my diaper slightly. And so it seems to be pretty clear of what I sort of intend to show, or to talk about. So here's a brief list of people I have been working with on related topics, about what I'm going to talk about. And so if you sort of, I guess have heard my comments, you sort of realize that sort of a very narrow mind in terms of my interest is internet, and that I don't know anything about biology. From what I have seen about social networks, I don't really want to go too deep into social networks. So it's the internet. Okay, so it's I have to keep that in mind. So my talk is really about that particular aspect of the internet. Basic question I'm going to ask or to discuss here is, so there's always this notion, well, we have all these measurements available in the internet. And isn't that such a beautiful situation where we can do pretty much anything we want? You know? People do pretty much anything they want, and we use data. And my question is, do these measurements that we have, in particular, internet-related connectivity measurements, do they support the claims that you can find in the open literature? So my narrow mind is sort of has two components to it. These are the three key components that it consists of. So I care immensely about using the data in a way that requires a certain degree of data hygiene. I care very much about insisting on a certain minimal level of statistical rigor, and I would like to take. I would like that other people take this notion of model validation much more serious than what we have seen so far. And so these are the three aspects that I would like to cover in the talk. Before I do that, a couple of general statements about internet connectivity. When you talk about the internet, you really have to specify at which level you talk about connectivity structure. Whether you talk at the physical layer, where you talk about multi-level, so that's the physical infrastructure, or whether you talk up on the application level on the web, for example, or somewhere in between, Razor was talking about autonomous systems, for example. And so each one of these layers in the network hierarchy defines its own connectivity structure. And if you are not careful about what you, say you study internet connectivity, and you don't tell me exactly where, I sort of, you can tell me pretty much anything, because it doesn't mean too much if you, for example, you cannot study the propagation of epidemics in the web. That doesn't mean anything. You might complain to, if you remember Milena's talk, you cannot study, conductance in the AS topology, because the AS topology is not a physical topology, it's a logical topology. It doesn't make sense. So you really have to be careful, because otherwise you can sort of mislead people very quickly. Two general things that you can say about these topologies. As you move from the physical up to the virtual, what you see is in the physical one, the bottom ones are the physical one up. As they go up in the protocol stack, they become much more logical and virtual. In terms of dynamics, the bottom one on the physical infrastructure, these are changing very, very slowly. Up on the top, on the application level, they change very, very quickly. So if you want numbers, this is probably days and weeks, and up here probably seconds and minutes. It's very dynamic, very static. So these are all of the. So you have to be specific about what you're talking about. A couple of other comments that one can say in general about network connectivity measurements. Unfortunately, when it comes to measuring connectivity, there is no central repository where you can go there and say, I want this information about connectivity. It doesn't exist. For various reasons that ISPs don't want to reveal this information about their infrastructure or with whom they exchange traffic. You cannot inspect it. You don't have exact measurement tools to do it, so engineers come up with hacks. And the result is that you really, in general, don't get what you would like to have. You some sort of data, but not the data that you would like to have. And the question is again, can you do with those data the things that people do? Two examples I'm going to talk about: physical infrastructure, auto level, and then I go back to the topic of Fraser's talk, first part of the talk, BS level topology. I won't go, I don't think I have time to go into measurements and modeling of web peer-to-peer networks, but you will get the idea. So, okay, so on measuring internet router level topology. So here we talk about the physical infrastructure of the network. What do people use? A tool called TraceHub. Many of you may be familiar with TraceHub. Roughly, it works like, so if I send a packet, if I'm in New Jersey, to Philip in Vienna, I basically get back from each router that the packet encounters on its way to Vienna, which router it is. Okay. And so then people do large-scale TraceHub experiments where they send packets from many sources to many different destinations. You get these tons and tons of paths, and you try to glue them together to get the network structure. So people have done those experiments early on, almost 10 years ago. The first people, a couple of people in France, and this stuff is happening still today. This is sort of the latest couple of years old effort, which is pretty much state of the art. And there is an ongoing project in the EU, in some EU project, and it's again does the same sort of trace on large scale trace on experiments. And what you get out of those efforts have been nice pictures. There's one set of pictures that comes from at the time Bell Labs, Bill Cheswick and his students. And again, here you have to realize that these pictures don't really say anything about physical connectivity of the internet. It just is basically a router tree at Bell Labs, and you trace out to a million different locations, and that's what you get. It doesn't really say anything about how the network is connected. It's just like a router tree. And then you color it in certain ways, but you make it look beautiful. And Bill Cheswick would agree that the only purpose was to make beautiful pictures. But then these pictures have been taken more seriously recently. And yeah, that's
very much. Is there any difference between the left and the right?
It's the coloring. I mean, I don't remember what the coloring is. You can imagine hop distance on the left, maybe, on the right, to which AES, that end node belong, subsequent place. He has various ways of doing this. But yeah, I just want to remind you, you very often see these pictures. We saw some of these pictures. They don't represent anything as far as the network connectivity is concerned. It's just, this is a little more serious. This is an attempt by the Mercator people, so the Ramesh Govindan and his students, to map an ISP. So a medium-sized and small-sized ISP, and they ran this trace out for the one purpose, that we had these trace out experiments for this one purpose, namely to map the router level topology of those ISPs. And the question is how accurate it is. So they get results, they get maps. The question is how accurate are those maps? This is another effort by CADA using the SCIL tool. You know, beautiful picture. Question is how serious can you take this stuff? This is from this rocket fuel. This is state of the art, trying to do, again, recovering the router level topology of particular ISPs. This is AT&T. This is level 3. So you get all these maps from all these measurements. The question is how can you trust those maps? Key observation is TraceHub is strictly at the IP layer. It only speaks IP. And if you sort of know a little bit the network, I'll show you in a picture in a minute. IP is here, but the internet architecture consists of many more layers. And in particular, the physical outer level topology is down here. So if you have a tool that only speaks IP, it only sees this layer. And if you know that, then you know, if you send a packet across your network and that packet, due to some technology which exists out there, ends up in the lower layers, IP will never see what's going on. Traceroute will never give them, give you the information of what's happening on the lower level in terms of the physical infrastructure. So if you know that, then you can go and sort of say, okay, what happens in this matter? Is this the actual physical topology? No. This is a particular example of a layer two technology that a packet comes in on an ingress node, disappears from traceroute until it reappears on the egress side. So traceroute doesn't give you any information about the underlying physical topology. Nothing. It just looks like a fully connected mesh. But that's not the physical topology. Yet people use this map, they do the no-degree distribution of these maps, and they model it based on whatever preferential model they like. Okay, so, but this is an example that doesn't say anything about the physical topology. Another example is this one. So it's a beautiful picture. It turns out that if you be a little bit more careful, then you find out that this particular IP address corresponds to a whole network, an underlying AM, a different technology that's used, AM. And it's not a high degree node. It's a whole national network that's underlying this one node. Yet to trace out, it appears to be, wow, we found a high degree node. So the ironic thing about trace out is, you know, it finds high degree nodes, but they are wrong. They are fake. And if there are high degree nodes, so it's plausible that there are higher degree nodes in the network, but they would exist at the edge of the network, and trace out would never find them. So this is the irony. You see high degree nodes from traceroute, but they are fake. If there are high degree nodes in the network, you don't get it from traceroute. You don't see it. Yet people use this traceroute data, use them at least for a long time, to infer the maps and then try to model these maps and say, here we have maps and models for the output of the point. I mean, there are other problems with traceroute, and you can talk to Aaron, who was working on this, in this domain. And then there is a huge other domain where there is not much known, but this is as serious as this one. And I'm not going to talk about it. We can discuss that later on if you want. But basically, there are three big problems with traceroute. And if you know that these are these three big problems, you will never take traceroute data at face value. You will always scrutinize it extremely carefully. What claims have been made about the output level topology? And here I just go back to my title. So I show you now how you can lie with statistics. I show you what white lies are, what are damp lies. Well, damp lies are these claims that the output level topology of the internet, or I come back to it, some other topology, has an Achilles heel, which is highly vulnerable to target attacks. So how do you lie with the statistics using this data? Yes, first time. So I give you a sample from an exponential distribution, let's say 100 observations. And I show you how I can get power law out of that sample. I can plot the data in such a way that you get power law. So this is a log log plot. This is the data. Straight line, beautiful straight line. Again, the irony is, here is data from a Pareto type distribution. Doesn't look like Pareto at all.
So what
does
YE and YS stand
for? YE is sample from an exponential. YS is sample from a Pareto.
And
then
you just sample that randomly?
Yeah, I didn't do anything fancy.
And it was one try, or did you try a few before you found something like this?
Just do one try. Just do one try.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I have to say, you know, you have like the tail of the distribution where you have all those steps. I mean, there's a lot of stuff hidden there.
Yeah, yes, yes. But these are the plots that you see,
yeah,
and people make power law claims based on this plot. Okay, and this is an explanation.
Okay. We agree.
Along the same lines, I generate a sample from Pareto with parameter alpha equals 1. I show you how you can get parameter alpha equals 1.5. want it, you get it. Nobody would argue seriously that this is not a reasonable fit on this plot. So, you can get pretty much anything you want. You just have to plot it the right way. And that's really, it's still amazing. It still amazes me that has been done 10 years ago, it has been done 5 years ago, it's still been done. And from these plots, these are the starting points for, we have power laws in our data, and then we go model this stuff so that we can reproduce, that we get models that reproduce this power law. When in the first place, the power law isn't there. How do you avoid it? That's what goes back to what Reza said. Plot it two different ways. So here is the non-cumulative way, frequencies. And here's the cumulative way. Now here, nobody would argue that this is a reasonable fit to the data. Now, I'm never interested in particular, whether it's 1.1, 1.2, 9.9 or anything. I just thought one and a half estimate. In particular, I want to make sure that I don't get one half, but roughly one. Okay. So Aaron can tell you if you want to statistically accurate. Okay, different story, but I don't know. At this point, I'm not interested. I just want to be in the right ballpark. I want to be in the right ballpark whether it's power law or not. If it's power law, I want to be in the right ballpark as far as the exponents. One more plot that sort of basically shows up there is the cumulative, down here is the non-cumulative, left is log-log, right is log-linear. And again, the irony is that you just get it opposite in the way. The scaling one looks like an exponential. Now, how has this technique been used to make claims about power laws in the routering topology? This is the data set that is typically used in the complex network literature to say, oh yeah, there are all these data sets that have power law. Here is the internet router-level topology. These are the raw data, and this is the plot that you usually see in the papers. You bin them. Now, I told you that this cannot happen. Trace out. These points are fake. Trace out. Got screwed by this underlying layer 2 topology. And these are not high degree nodes. They don't exist. So do the plot the way you should do. And what you see is there is absolutely no discussion. This is a log linear one. This is a nice exponential thing. So something that has never been argued that, oh yes, this is beautiful power law, turns out is a little bit taking care of some aspects of the data, doing the plot in a reasonable way. There is no discussion that anybody would sort of come and say, okay, I want to generate a model that produces power laws, because why would you do that? It's not in the first place. Because I know based on the tool that is being used to generate the data that I use, that's used to give you these values. So if I don't know it, if I take the data at face value, then I do this. You may be safe doing this, and then you would go and do your favorite model. But that's a big no-no. So how do we avoid such fallacies? Well, the issue is taking. So the starting point for any sort of modeling is anyways for one and the same observation or observed phenomena. You would expect that there are many different ways to model or explain. From a modeling perspective again, you have to go into this business, you have to be aware that all models are wrong because you never get it exactly. Milena was sort of basically implying that I am only interested in exact models. I know that I don't know exact models, but I want at least be approximately right. I don't want to be completely wrong. Our standard of model validation reduces to this one sentence. Okay. We think we do model validation if we show that our model reproduces a power. That is not model validation, that's just data fitting. That doesn't tell me anything about the validity of the model in the context in which I will have, where the data now goes. So it took us quite a long time to sort of come up with alternatives to preferential attachment models that make sense in the outer topology. And they exist now. These are these hot, fall in the domain of hot-based models that Beza mentioned. But you can now do things that you couldn't do before. You can go and show that these models are consistent with what's out there. Not only that, but they are consistent with the technology that's being used in today's outer-level topology. And then a point I will come back to it, and they give rise to a model validation aspect that sort of says, look, you came into this business with certain types of measurements. Now the model gives rise to completely different types of measurements that you can go out and measure. And if they are consistent with what this model predicts, then you have an aspect of model validation that we never had before. And by the way, this becomes a non-issue. Right. I come back to this. So there has been always this complaint, oh, you don't have access to router-level topologies. Well, that may be true for particular ISPs, but there are these academic networks. Philip was using data from this particular network in terms of net flows. Here we have they provide you with the detailed configuration of this network in terms of you can go to them, you can go and see what type of router is it, whether this is a Cisco or Juniper, how many interfaces there are, what's the bandwidth of each interface, what's the capacity of the router. Every little detail is sitting there. And then you can reproduce this thing. But of course, what you see here is there's no high degree node in the network. So if these high degree nodes exist, then they would be sitting up here. A place I would never find.
And those aren't supposed to be routers, the nodes there, they're just...
These are
actual routers.
These nodes are these guys.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's another issue. So a node is not just a node. A node is something like this, and something like this has a physical constraint. You can only shove so many interfaces in here, in particular, only 16. And if you want to go to 100, you can do it. You will, I will show you a plot, you will get terrible decrease in efficiency of this router, but so you can do it, and what you do is you parallelize these interfaces to a certain degree.
I'm probably missing some fairly obvious point. Why do you say that if a high degree node exists, it'll be on the edge of the graph?
Oh, okay. I will come back to that.
Okay.
Give me a minute. So a node is not just a node. A node is something like this. Something like this has a physical constraint. You cannot ignore it when you do the modeling. So here is something, in a couple of years ago, this was the most expensive router you could buy from Cisco. This shows you how many degrees, also how many interfaces you could put in here, and what the capacity of the router was. So if you use that router to the highest possible capacity, which is up here, then you could only put in like 16 interfaces. So the degree of the router could only be 16 at the most. Now you can now push the degree up from 16 up to like 120 by parallelizing each one of these interfaces by lower speed links in parallel. And that's sometimes being done, but you know, typically you don't want to do that in the backbone where you really would like to use these backbone routers to the most efficient way. Now, here is a validation. So we go to Evelyn, we go to the Scenic or whatever network is publicly available, and you check. They have these routers, where do they fall in this technology curve, namely interface capacity. And of course there is no surprise, they fall right in this region because that's the only type of routers you can buy in the market. There is no other router out there that does, that lets you do something like up here. Doesn't exist. Now, you know, working at AT&T, we have a little bit of a benefit here in terms of actually validating the same thing also for AT&T's network. And doing that shows you that, you know, this is exactly what you expect again. Nothing more. Nothing surprising. Again, the backbone route was low degree, high capacity. Now, where do the high degree, if they exist, occur? On the edge, where you can aggregate potentially 1,000 or 2,000 dial-up links or DSL links. Okay? And that's why Traceroute never can find them, because you will never have so many destination addresses or destination addresses in that location. So this is an aspect of validation that with any sort of preferential attachment type models you could never do, because those models don't tell you to do this. Whereas the hot model, each hot model immediately tells you, here are the routers, they have these constraints, go and check them out.
The reason that the Traceroute won't find them is also because they're all hiding under one IP.
Say it again?
The reason the Traceroute won't find them is because they're all hiding under one IP address.
No, I mean, if you would, the only way to detect this high degree node at the edge would be for you to have actually access to the IP addresses for all these machines out there.
Right.
And no organization has that knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay. If they find a handful of IP addresses, then they are lucky.
Yeah.
Okay. Even if you do this the larger scale traceroute experiment, it just doesn't get there. Okay, here is a litmus test for network. Two components to it. So I had a discussion with Christian, and he, as always, he escapes. So I told him one way to move beyond what we have nowadays is to say, look, I don't care about multi-degrees. I want to make it a non-issue. Now I feel like a bad parent because I took away from Christian his favorite toy. That's the preferential attachment mechanism. And there are two natural reactions to that. So Christian tells me, and we had this discussion yesterday, he tells me, I want another toy. Give me another toy. And my reaction is, you go and look for your own toy. Which is two very reasonable responses. And probably the reasonable thing would be something in the middle where I help him to find something that he likes. But without this quantity of node-degree distribution, the preferential attachment industry is dead. Because there is nothing else to get their hands on. This is the only thing. Now, there are good reasons why you want to get rid of it. So if you have high-quality data and low variability in node-degrees, you would get an exponential, and nobody would even care about the node-degree distribution because they think it's obvious. I mean, there is nothing surprising there with exponential. The only thing that they get excited is about if it's powerful. Okay, but then there are arguments and different talk about it. I think this should be even less surprising than this stuff. But I don't want to discuss that stuff. The important thing is the second one. I have hopefully convinced you that as far as internet connectivity related measurements are concerned, we deal with extremely low quality data. Never take them at face value. In particular, never use them to make a claim about the specific type of distribution, node-degree distribution. It's a power law, in particular not about the exponent. Okay? Because it's so ambiguous, and if you don't show me that your claim about a particular distribution is robust to the ambiguities in the data that I know of, then I don't buy any of your models. As I said, if you do this, then preferential attachment models are dead on the line. They wouldn't have, nobody would have considered that. But unfortunately, the node degree has not been a non-issue. My claim is it should be a non-issue.
So this is true even for not the internet, but for higher levels, or for citation networks and so on and so forth.
This
objection.
This litmus test is there even on a higher level.
But not for like co-author citation networks.
I could get
you're
that.
You're talking
that
about
stuff.
The internet. So you're framing this all in the context of the internet.
I said I have a better name.
Yeah, but that was.
No, but I'm just saying, the objections on the fact of going to be more.
Yeah,
I'm just protecting the people who escape.
There's no escape. There's no escape.
Only reasonable alternative. So what's the alternative? If I take this story away from you, there's only one reasonable alternative, and that is you have to bring in and rely on domain knowledge. And that's a bad news. That's bad news because people who are interested in universal generic type models don't like this. Unfortunately. And I don't know where there is a good ground to meet.
Could I have another objection, Justin? So I don't do any of this stuff, right? But suppose somebody has generic philosophical understanding of something, and he comes up with a model that actually predicts things that weren't there in the data when he looked at it. Right?
Yeah.
Really different, not degree distribution, something
yeah.
else. Right? So maybe there's some generic phenomena about, you know, statistical accumulation of entities or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, some generic model is useful.
Yes.
Right? And you can still do a Latin statistics. It's not based on, you know, in the construction of the model you have to rely on. Maybe there are some generic principles
that
should be verified, but
that's exactly, so Christian may find a new toy, which would be great. And then he shows me what it can do.
Right.
And I go and try to validate it. That's the exchange that I would like that Christian wants to me. He throws at me the question, give me more models that I can analyze. I want, in exchange, I want from him more models that I can check. And then we have a dialogue.
And you're also focused on the internet. You said the World Wide Web in your first slide, but that's not included in
this.
Yes,
it is.
Okay.
Can be discussed, but I just want to throw the whole step.
Okay.
Internet
so
to me
okay.
means now the whole step. So, yes. And so this litmus test has these two notions. One is get rid of noting a distribution and say, I don't care about it. The second one is you have to ask this question. And that is, what new kinds of measurements does the proposed model suggest for the purpose of modeling? As I said, any preferential attachment model that I have seen so far ignores the second aspect or fails with respect to the second. Of course, it fails with respect to the first one. Whereas the hot models I saw, like the demonstrator, hopefully illustrated, does this naturally because it uses domain knowledge and all this stuff.
Well, sorry, what was the very last thing?
Hot. So I haven't told you what these hot models are. But basically, so starting point is, in this context of the internet, in terms of open level topology, these networks are designed for a purpose. They are designed to carry traffic. They are designed to carry an expected traffic demand. They have to do it in such a way that they are efficient. They have to satisfy, the routers have to satisfy these constraints. You cannot push more than they can do. And they have to be economic, so the economics comes in as well. You don't want to build an expensive network. So you formulate this as a constraint optimization problem. Objective function is push as much traffic as you can through. Constraints are given. Solution of the constraint optimization problem is this. It tells you how to connect the routers in such a way that the constraints are satisfied. And when you look at these networks, engineers look at them and yes, this is how we build it. Right. Engineers could build scale-free networks. They could build preferential attachment type networks. They are, in terms of performance, so lousy that nobody who is clear in his mind would build them.
I guess I'm just wondering what type of data is this get data?
The example here was just this model. So this model tells me, go out and get data about the routers themselves,
okay.
In terms of what's their capacity, how many interfaces do they have.
Okay.
I go out, check it, and of course they fit, I mean, they validate this model. No other model has been able to do it. Okay, now we come closer to laser things and some discussions there. AS level topology. So as Razor mentioned, AESs are autonomous systems, so they have a bunch of routers that are under their own administrative domain. So certain AESs, these couple of routers, one person will be responsible for configuring them, running them, and making sure that things work. This is a different company. They do it their own way, and there are all these types of companies. So this would be the graph. A node is an AES, and the links between them are established by peering relationships. So these links reflect economic or business relationships. These are, in that sense, these are not physical links, these are logical links. Another way of showing that is simple sketch here. Different types of relations, so these are domains, these are the AESs. Within AES, you have certain types of routing that's just under the control of the AES. Then you have the peering links, and there are different types of peering links. One is if the AESs are of reasonable comparable strength in terms of economic strength or the type, the amount of traffic that they carry, you do a peering relationship that's like this. On the other hand, you have provider customer relationships and some other special kind of things which I didn't put in here. That is basically, this is a customer, and he looks, who does he want to peer with as an upstream provider? So this customer generates traffic, and it wants to connect to the internet in some sense, in some way, either by connecting to this guy, or to this guy, or to this guy, and the question is, how does he do it? But so in that, just keep in mind, these nodes are logical nodes. The links are not physical links, but logical links, so business relationships. And the AES graph is, in that sense, not a physical network, but a logical network. To bring that point out one way is a very simple AES graph. Three AESs, like what it could mean, potentially, at the router level is this. That's not an unreasonable way to put the AESs and the routers into the picture. Yet another way to think, and keep in mind, because that's important, and that's where the laser and I probably start diverging a bit, and that is, you have to think about AESs in terms of a stack of pancakes. These are the eight tier one AESs, or the biggest AESs in the US. Each one of these AESs have a national presence, so this is the US map laid out this one, so you don't see exactly, but you can imagine. And what you do is, so these have, each one of these AESs have a national presence. They have a national network, and that network covers the whole United States. So these links that you see going this way are links within the AES, the POP level links. And then you see these links.
And how did you get these links? How did they get them? Obviously not through Traceroute, because that doesn't work.
So yeah, this is not a precise picture, this is a sketch based on BGP data. So it's just to illustrate that, you know, we always see a beautiful plot of the AES, but if you think of it in terms of what that actually means, what an AES actually means is, an AES is a entity that covers the whole United States with points of presence, where the routers are. So each one of the AESs have routers in various locations in the US, and what they do is they peer with one another in some of these routers. So in particular the West Coast, East Coast, and somewhere in between. And that's what you have to have in this picture, because geography is a major issue when it comes to routing, when it comes to attaching to the AES graph.
So is there any statistical sense in which you can prove that this has geography? Or is
yes.
Are we just supposed to see it from
you are supposed to see it. I mean, this made use of a data set, and again, it is not accurate. However, I can go to these particular routers in each one of these AESs and go and get the address and do a lookup, and it gives me the geographic location of the router. So that's possible. And this picture certainly will miss a bunch of routers, certainly will miss tons of links, but it's just this mental picture that an AES graph that you always see pictures like this. No, it is a stack of pancakes. three types of data sets that people use as laser sets, the BGP router cable, phase out base, and other data sets. Each one of them had their own problems. So lots of work on AS modeling has been done with these BGP-based data sets, where it is now known for many, many years that they probably miss up to 50% of the links. So people calculate all these statistics about these inferred AES maps, ignoring the fact that potentially 50% of the links are missing. For example, no-degree distribution. What does this fact do to the inference to no-degree distribution? If you know that 50% of the links are potentially missing, it certainly.
So it's something like the social network.
Anyway, so it has all, so that the missing that stuff is only one instance. There are other problems that come with it in terms of, you know, again, I don't, when I see a new node come for the first time in my data, I don't know, have I missed that consistently over the last couple of weeks or months, or is it really a new AS or a new link that came, I was put in place? We don't know that. We have to guess it. And then we are guessing this. Business relationships is yet another issue. Who is database? Now, so Razor was careful saying that what she ended up using is the European part of the Who is database. But then you only get the European AS. So you don't get the AS level topology of the internet, you get a piece of it. The US one is known to be extremely unreliable because it's just sort of a public repository where ISPs are supposed to go and register. Nobody tells them they have to, and many of them don't. Those who do, don't necessarily put in the right information. So, do you want to use that database to infer AS level topology? Probably not. At least not without scrutinizing these data sets carefully. And trace our base measurements have all these problems that we've already talked before. So what has been the general approach? And I guess Razor's talk was sort of state-of-the-art approach to this stuff. You take the available data at face value, you analyze the data as if they provide the ground truth, you propose a model, and then you argue for the validity based on the fact that it reproduces particular statistics. That's what's going on. And of course, what we have in terms of criticism of this stuff is all these long things that we have been talking about. Now, this is something that you have to chew on a little bit. So again, this is a typical example of BGP data has never been intended to provide you with connectivity information. The engineers just use it as a hack, as a substitute in the absence of anything else. And so it's not surprising that these data don't give you what you want. And again, this has to be taken more seriously when you do this modeling. So,
what's the comment on the Fanchon paper? Sorry.
Oh, so this is the one example that shows in 2004 one way to go and check how many links may be missing. How you go about proving that stuff. Here's an example of how you may go about this. These are about 50 routers for which we had exact information in terms of using a particular software that's sometimes available on particular routers in the network, and that's looking glass information. And if you look at the inferred node degree versus the actual node degree of these ASs, you see where the discrepancy is. How big the discrepancies can be. So there are a few routers for which you can actually do it, check very carefully what's going on, and just doing it for a handful makes you realize things are not working out very well. Okay, so to do this parallel about claims about internet AS level topology, same thing what we did before for the router level topology. So the one thing power law non-degree distribution is certainly something I don't think power law is the right thing. What I think everybody agrees about is white distribution. White lies. Eventual attachment. I don't think that that's the right thing. And lies again. The Achilles heel comes again here because, you know, the original paper by Barabasi sort of didn't make a distinction between AS or outer. It just said knock out the node, whether the node is an outer or an AS, and, you know, the network falls apart. So, you know, if we try to argue, oh, you know, the network is not fragile because it, you know, you cannot knock out routers, then there is always the counter, oh, we didn't mean routers, we meant AS, but same story for AS. It's just a different reason.
How do you
take out an AS?
Yeah.
So if I showed you this with the pancakes,
yeah.
Take one of those pancakes away. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Not easy. So what's my take on this as far as modeling approach is concerned? So here my starting point is this, and again, this is something one could discuss. But I think, and here there are certain indications that the way a provider AES decides how to connect to an upstream provider is not done by throwing a coin. It is economics. And if you don't, so it's economics and it's geography. Because an AES only, and a new AES who comes and looks around. First, most critical thing is he looks at what provider AESs have geographic location nearby to which they can connect. They won't connect to an AS that is hundreds and hundreds of miles away. The geography comes in immediately, and on top of it, then economics comes in. If they have choices between a couple of providers that have geographic location nearby, then they will pick the ones that are, you know, the best or the cheapest for in their sense. And so, if you don't take into account geography, if you don't take into account economics, and part of economics is, as I argued before, traffic, then you cannot possibly get an accurate model, or approximately accurate model. And so there is a first step towards trying to come up with a approach that tries to capture these ingredients. It's sort of a first approach, a first toy model in the same sense as the outer level topology, but very different mechanisms, very different constraints, and hence very different connectivity. Some engineering implications, which relates to talks that Philip gave, Razor mentioned. This is this narrow perspective of the internet, yet the internet provides you with tremendously interesting examples. Dynamics of graphs. There are two issues of dynamics of graphs. Evolution of the connectivity structure themselves, and in particular in the AS context, you also have to take into account that the nodes themselves evolve over time. These are businesses. They change over time. Most or almost all AS topology modeling has assumed that a node is a node, has no internal structure. That is not good enough. Dynamics of graph, and then of course the challenging problem is you have a structure that carries traffic. That traffic impacts the structure, and the structure impacts how the traffic is routed. So there is this feedback between the structure and the traffic via routing that currently, you know, we don't have a good.
Now, how long is the vector that you can measure there? It goes dot, dot, dot.
Well, I mean, yeah, you have seen Philip's stuff, for example. I mean, you can go up to application-specific entities, requests, responses. Granularity here is pretty much unlimited because sessions.
And what can one measure now?
Well, we can measure bytes pretty much on every link in the network. So number of bytes per 5 minutes can be on every link in the network. Packets are in a few places you do packet traces, you can complete the packet tracing in a few places. Flows, as Philip mentioned, Internet 2 for example, pretty much every router is equipped with NetFlow measurement equipment, and you can get flows on every router.
Mm-hmm. Sampled,
Sessions is very hard to get. We don't know that how to do that yet. But this is sort of the key challenge that we have. And then Philip's talk discussed this one in the higher level. This is something that I'm thinking more in there. Oops. Okay, that's just mentioning. If you're interested in and want to make claims about robustness and fragility of the network, you cannot do that without taking into account the system as a whole. In particular, you have to bring in the protocol side. Because you knock out a router, the system is designed so that the traffic gets rerouted and nothing happens as far as you from a user perspective. And if you take that away, of course the system is fragile. Same thing in the AS level. Okay, one last slide. So I don't talk about the whole overlay topology problems with measurements. A reminder. So in the past, when we dealt with network traffic data, these data were known to be of extremely high quality. We have equipment that measures bytes, packets, flows, sampled or not sampled, extremely accurate. At the same time, you always have to remind yourself that whatever model you propose, the model will be wrong, but some of them will be useful. That's the famous quote by Bobs. Now, more recently, so we have been dealing in this context where the data are not high quality. They are extremely ambiguous, and that has caused serious problems, because if you take the data face value, you end up with bad models. And there are a number of examples where the bad models had implications. Okay. I mean, they haven't caused any public outrage or fear, but they have distorted our understanding of the internet. And they have led to a view on the public policymakers, that is, a view of the internet that is completely wrong in terms of this fragility aspect. If you go to, I mean, you still hear politicians and policymakers discussing the fact that, oh, the internet has this fragility. Isn't that so terrible? And it comes from a bad model that has been touted as this big discovery. And it's really, really frustrating. Okay, the last thing here, what should we do? Or how should we think about this in terms of, we will have to deal with ambiguous data one way or the other. We will never, in the connectivity issue, never get to this point where we can rely on the quality of the data. So what's the alternative? Well, the alternative is not a Boxer's quote, but a quote from Mandelbrot. And that is, what you really want is just, in this case, all what you want to do is be approximately right and not certifiably wrong. That's all that you can hope for. And I've given you an example of, in the router level topology, of a model that is certifiably wrong and one that is approximately right. And that's the only thing that we can hope for. Okay, I'm not.